Glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Patarane Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Paska Chade Shatarane. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Vanchakalpa Chubhischa Kripa Sindhavacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So May 23rd, 2023 in New Dwarka, ISKCON, Los Angeles, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 14, Pregnancy of Diti in the Evening, Text 31. Yes? Right? Saviditvatabharyayas tam nirbandham vikarmani natvadisthaya rahasi tayatopavivesahi. Saha, he, viditva, understanding, ata, thereupon, baryaya, of the wife, tam, that, nirbandham, obstinacy, vikarmani, in the forbidden act, natva, offering obeisances, dishtaya, unto worshipable fate, rahasi, in a secluded place, taya, with her, ata, thus, upavivesha, lay, he, certainly. Srila Prabhupada's translation. Understanding his wife's purpose, he was obliged to perform the forbidden act. And thus, after offering his obeisances unto worshipable fate, he lay with her in a secluded place. Srila Prabhupada's purport. It appears from the talks of Kasyapa with his wife that he was a worshipper of Lord Shiva. And although he knew that Lord Shiva would not be pleased with him for such a forbidden act, he was obliged to act by his wife's desire, and thus he offered his obeisances unto fate. He knew that the child born of such an untimely sexual intercourse would certainly not be a good child, but he could not protect himself because he was too obligated to his wife. In a similar case, however, when Thakur Haridas was tempted by a public prostitute at the dead of night, he avoided the allurement because of his perfection in Krishna consciousness. That is the difference between a Krishna conscious person and others. Kasyapa Muni was greatly learned and enlightened. And he knew all the rules and regulations of systematic life. Yet, he failed to protect himself from the attack of sex desire. Thakur Haridas was not born of a Brahmana family, nor was he himself Brahmana, yet he could protect himself from such an attack due to his being Krishna conscious. Thakur Haridas used to chant the holy name of the Lord 300,000 times daily. Savidit-vat-tabaryayas tam nirbandham vikarmani natvadishtaya rahasi tayatopavivesahi. Understanding his wife's purpose, he was obliged to perform the forbidden act, and thus, after offering his obeisances unto worshipful fate, he lay with her in a secluded place. So I thought the word vikarma here is very interesting. We have karma, vikarma, and akarma. So karma is the good things that you get good results for. like pious activities that you get, you know, a beautiful body and money and education. And vikarma is the bad things that will get you in trouble, that will get you poor and sickly and in legal trouble. And then there's akarma, which gives you liberation. So here we have vikarma. Now, of course, we might ask, how is this vikarma? They're married and she wants a child. That seems pretty karma. So what made it vikarma was, Prabhupada has this word, untimely. And I think this is a very interesting concept. We find this also in the Bhagavad Gita in regards to the three modes of nature. That something that's normally good and pious, when done at the wrong time or in the wrong frame of mind, makes it sinful. Isn't that interesting? Like if you look at charity in the modes. So sattva charity is you give to the right person at the right time and the right place just because giving charity is the right thing to do. You're not trying to get anything out of it. You're trying to be in harmony with truth. That's what sattva means. Sat means true, and tva means ness, like goodness, truthness. I want to do what's true and right just because it's true and right. People who are very sattvic, they're like, I'm in harmony with truth, right? That's their ego. I'm very in harmony with truth. They're giving charity because that's the right thing to do. Then in Rajas, you're still giving to the right person at the right time and the right place. But you're doing it so that you can be praised and that you can get good karma. Other people will notice. Or also, Srila Prabhupada says, which is very relevant to this, is you may be giving charity out of obligation. Prabhupada uses the word obliged in this purport, in the verse and in the purport. So your boss says to you, you know, everyone's expected to give in charity, and so you give in charity. Have you ever given your time, energy, thought, care, money because someone pressured you to do it and you didn't really want to do it? So that puts it into Rajas. You're doing the right thing at the right time and at the right place, but you have some resentment about it. You don't really want to do it. It puts it into Rajas. Then in Tamas, you're giving to the right person, but the wrong place. You're giving to a saintly person, you know, while they're in the bathroom. Here's or disrespectfully, here, Maharaj, here's your donation. Or you're giving to the wrong person. You know, you're giving to an alcoholic for them to buy more alcohol. But it can be, you're giving to the right person. But there's something funny about it. You know, like, excuse me, Prabhu, I'm on the toilet. This is not the right place to give me your donation. Or you wake them up in the middle of the night. Hello, hello, I want to give you Prabhu, it's 1 a.m. So just having it be at the wrong time, it can be the right thing, but the right thing at the wrong time can push something into tamas and make what's normally karma, vikarma. That's interesting, isn't it? Right, we have in the 7th canto, when it's asked, why is the Lord appeared to be partial? Which kicks off the whole story of Nrisingadev. And the answer is, the Lord is not partial. He favors sattva. And to me, this is logical, because sattva means truthness. So I always give the example that the builders and the architect of this building, they didn't make the walls to give you pain. They didn't make the windows to give you pain. But if you want to go in or out of the building, you can't use the walls or the windows. And that's not prejudiced on the part of the builders. So when you go in and out through the doors, you're happy. And if you act in sattva, you're happy. Now, if you try to go in or out of the doors when they are locked, in other words, if you're using the right method but at the wrong time, the same effect will be there as if you try to go through the walls. Is that clear to everybody? So doing the right, have you ever brought up a very difficult conversation to a person at the wrong time? Who's ever done that? Right, right person, right conversation. It had to take place, but you brought it up at the wrong time. And what was the result? Nah. Right? Bir Krishna Swami likes to say that he learned that there was one sannyasi that he couldn't talk to him about anything difficult before prasadam. Yeah, had to have already eaten. Right? Or how do you feel when someone tries to do something with you at the wrong time? You're like, I can't do it right now, sorry. And they insist. It feels like someone trying to walk through a wall. So this becomes vikarma. Therefore, Krishna talks about how these laws of karma, they're very difficult, aren't they? We might think, right person, right action, wrong time. And he told his wife, he said, this is the wrong time. Just wait a little bit. She's like, I don't want to wait. And then what does he do? He says, I guess it's destiny. I guess it's destiny. So this brings up our big question, is why do we do things we know are wrong? Who here has ever done something that they knew was the wrong thing to do? Anybody here ever done something you knew it was wrong when you were doing it? And it might be a little thing, like eating that third piece of cheesecake. You know, it might not be some major thing that's going to cause Hiranyakashipu to be born, but, you know, it's something. And you know you're going to regret it. That's basically, we could say, a definition of vikarma. The definition of vikarma is it will bring some result. Its reaction is unfavorable, at least to you, who's doing the action, and probably to others. Right? To try to walk through the wall or try to get out of the building through the window, at least you yourself will suffer. And probably other people will suffer, because other people care about you, and if you try to get out through the window, they'll have to take you to the hospital, right? And they may have to take care of you while you're in a wheelchair for a month. So vikarma is something, we could define vikarma as something that's against truth, and therefore gives us a bad reaction. But we all do it knowingly. And when I was when I first read Srila Prabhupada's translation of the Bhagavad Gita, I was in college, and in that particular printing, this question of Arjuna in the third chapter was at the bottom right of the page. You all know what this question is? Why are we forced to do sinful activities seemingly against our wills, like we're forced? Does Kasyapa feel forced here? Yeah. Is he forced? Is he forced? No. Does he feel forced? Yes. He thinks, I'm helpless. I don't have a choice. It's my wife. She won't wait an hour. I mean, how ridiculous is that? Okay. Jai, fate. So the effect of vikarma is we hurt ourselves, we hurt others. And if we are engaged in vikarma, getting liberation is generally impossible. Unless you run into like Lord Nityananda on the street when he's doing Harinam. But, you know, usually if we're doing vikarma, you know, or Narada Muni walks through the forest while you're half killing the animals, you know, if he gets something like that. But usually if we're engaged in vikarma, we can't get out. Even if we're engaged in karma, we can't get out. But at least if we're engaged in karma, we can offer it to Krishna. How are you going to offer vikarma to Krishna? It doesn't work. At least if you're doing karma, you can become a karma yogi. So materially we get hurt, right? Our stomach hurts after the third piece of cheesecake. Or, you know, by saying something at the wrong time, somebody's angry with us and someone's upset and there's some mess to clean up. What to speak of heavy, heavy duty vikarma? Now, I'm going to ask a very difficult question, but I think it needs to be asked. Do we have people who are members of our Krishna consciousness movement, apparently initiated so far, who have engaged in horrific vikarma? And the answer is yes. Am I correct? Yes? If there's anything that goes on in the world, it has happened to people who are members of our Hare Krishna movement. Yes? We have people who've engaged in horrific criminal activities, not just eating 3 pieces of cheesecake or getting in an argument at the wrong time of day. Why? What's the cause and what's the solution? So what is the cause? You know, when I read this, that Arjuna asked this question, what's the cause? And then, what's the cause? What's the cause? Because I knew even then at college when I was 17 that I also had a problem with this, that I did things that I knew would give me some bad effect, and I felt like I was obligated, and I turned the page, and I read, and what did Krishna say? It is our lust. And I was very disappointed. I'm like, that's it? But what does lust mean? It means I want to do this thing so much, and generally I want to do it so much right now. This was also a right now problem. I want this so much and I want it right now that forget about the consequences. Does that make sense to everybody? It's this sense of an urgent crisis. I know I shouldn't talk to this person right now, but it's urgent. I have to eat that other piece of cheesecake. It's going to go away. But it's the same thing with people who do even very horrific criminal activities. I have to do this. I have this desire. I have this need. I have to fulfill it. I have to fulfill it now. I have to fill it in this way with this person. I know it's wrong. I know I'm going to suffer. I know other people are going to suffer. But my desire is so important. And fulfilling my desire is so important right now that I don't care what the consequences are. And so many excuses. Well, I didn't have a choice. I was helpless. This is what Kasyapa is doing. I'm helpless. Is he helpless? No. I'm helpless. Why am I helpless? It's my parents' fault. I was traumatized in childhood. It's the society's fault. I went to the wrong school. It's your fault. I had a bad temple president. My guru fell down. Whatever, it's somebody else's fault. Or I'm helpless because, I'm just a terrible person. What can I do? I'm a terrible person. I was just visiting my youngest son. We were taking the kids to baseball games and they were playing some music. And one of the songs was like, I never get any better. I forget the words exactly. Something like, it doesn't matter what I do. I can never fix myself. I'm still the same person tomorrow. But that's another, I'm just fallen. I'm just in Maya Prabhu. I can't do anything. It's just the modes of nature, right? So many excuses. I'm in a bad circumstance. I have a bad habit. All right, so what are the solutions? You know, when Prabhupada went to Chicago and he had that discussion, crime, why and what to do. What's the solutions? All right, so we have Kasyapa Muni here. So Prabhupada is calling him learned. Is he learned? He's a demigod, he's. By the way, with Aditi's sister, Aditi, he's the father of Indra. And later, quite a bit later, he becomes the father of Vamandeva. So there's hope. All right? He digs himself out of this hole. And he actually becomes a pure devotee of the Lord later on. But he's learned, Prabhupada says here, he's enlightened. He's very religious. Is he very religious? What does the Prabhupada say here? He knew all the rules and regulations. All right? So he knows everything. He knows what to do and what not to do. It's not a question of ignorance. He has logic. He's intelligent. He's religious. He's dedicated to right action. Does he have good habits? What did his wife interrupt him doing? Meditating. He was chanting his Gayatri mantras. It was the Sandhya. She interrupted him in the middle. And he said, not now. Wait an hour. So he had very good habits. Did he have good association? Definitely. Okay. Was he in a good, pious place? Very sattvic place? All right. Do you think he was able to have philosophical detachment in general? You don't think in general? I think he was in general. Yeah. I think he was expert in Gyan, in, you know, the freedom from attachment and aversion. Like Krishna talks about, you know, the rivers going into the ocean, which is ever being filled but remains. He could probably be detached from his own desires and be the observer. Like people talk about today, right, with mindfulness. And it's all over the Bhagavad Gita, all over our Shastra. So he did all that. My dear friends, many times, we who join the Hare Krishna movement think that that's the solution, that these things are the solution. I just have to strictly follow all the rules exactly like this and have good habits and have good association and know the philosophy and be able to detach my mind. And then I'll become free from this problem of vikarma. Does that work absolutely all the time? No. It does generally work. It does generally work. In other words, if you get yourself, what we're talking about is sattvagun. If you get yourself to sattvagun, and you can have the mood of an observer of your thoughts, feelings, and desires, you eat very sattvic food, you live in a sattvic place, you have good habits, you're very pious, you're very religious, you really know philosophy, you know all the rules, then the vast number of times when other people are going to mess up and go into vikarma, you won't. And many times you'll even be a little proud of it, because there's some pride even in sattva. Wow, I did not get pulled into that political argument. I did not eat even a second piece of cheesecake, what to speak of a third. I went to bed on time. I didn't watch that stupid thing on YouTube. Whatever it is, you know, and you'll think, well. But we see that even people like this have problems. Are there many stories in the Bhagavatam about people like this having problems? Oh, yeah. Why do you think it's there? You ever wondered that? My daughter now with her Gurukul students is in the 9th canto, and she said, there's a lot of really funny stories in the 9th canto. I'm like, yep. There's all these stories about very elevated people who have their oopsies. And some of their oopsies are pretty, I mean, this is a pretty major oopsie. It wasn't just that they had a bad son and they had to cry about it, you know? Like, they produced like a Hitler kind of guy for the universe. I mean, it was a big error. So what's the solution? Now, the solution is very, very interesting. And the ultimate solution is only in bhakti. Now that doesn't mean we're the only people ever in the universe who do bhakti. But the solution is only in bhakti. And this is the funny thing of the solution doesn't occur to impersonalists or people who are just attached to pious life. Because they're thinking, well, the solution is just to get rid of lust. To get rid of that intense desire where you don't care about the consequences. Right? And again, they'll try to do it through external piety or internal mental detachment, like notice a desire at the contemplation phase and never let it get to attachment and never let it get to lust. But sometimes it slips by the guard, huh? Right? It's like the guard sleeping for a couple seconds. So we want, what does Rupa Goswami say is the price for bhakti? Greed. Which is very related to this idea of lust. I want this and I don't care what the price is. My dear friends, we are meant to have that for Krishna. That same intensity of desire, I want to please Rishikena, Rishikena, Sevanam, Bhakti, Ruchite, I want to please Krishna's senses now. And I don't care what the consequences are. So in a few weeks, I'm going to be going to the celebration in Chicago of the 50th anniversary of installing the deities, which is the day that I joined the Hare Krishna movement, the day and the place. And I mean, at least at that moment, I had that mood that I'm going to surrender to Krishna and I don't care what happens. I dropped out of school, which made my mother cry for many years. And I love my mother. It's not that I wanted to make her cry, but it was more important that I surrender to Krishna. Yes? That is the real side of this lust problem. Does that make sense to everybody? We do vikarma because we have some lust to satisfy my... I want to satisfy my senses. I want to satisfy my mind. I want to satisfy my false ego. And it's so important and it's so urgent that I don't care what the consequences are of my behavior to do it. Someone says something that I feel insults me, and so I get in a big argument and I offend them. Yes? I need to satisfy my desire and my pride and my thing. And I will do anything, even if it means that I've, you know, walked into a window or a wall and I suffer for hours or days or months afterwards. But the solution is to be willing to do that for Krishna. And when we're willing to do that for Krishna, then we're completely safe from falling into vikarma. It can't sneak past you. Because you're like, you know, I'm just going to satisfy Krishna. Because one of the consequences that we're willing to accept is that I apparently won't get what I want immediately. It becomes the opposite. Someone insults me and I'm thinking, what would satisfy Krishna? Will Krishna be satisfied by Trinada Pisunichi? No, that's what would satisfy Krishna. If I just go, yeah, whatever. Yeah, whatever. Oh, but the consequences might be that people will think this thing of me. Ah, I don't care about the consequences. So let them think this and that of me. Jai Hari Bo, that's Krishna's problem. He can defend me if he wants. If I don't do this right now and say this right now, something bad may happen. Whatever. Something bad happens to me, that's Krishna's problem. Let him take care of that. What would make Krishna happy in this moment? Never mind if making Krishna happy means that somebody doesn't like me or whatever, or I don't get any cheesecake at all. You know, how can I make Krishna happy in this moment? And let me not worry about the personal consequences for my ego. Just like in lust, it's let me satisfy my ego and let me not worry about the consequences for Krishna. Do you follow? Yes? Let me satisfy my senses, my mind, my ego, and forget about the consequences for Guru and Krishna. That Prabhupada's going to sit and cry, oh well, too bad. And the opposite is, let me please Prabhupada, let me please Krishna, and if my ego has to sit and cry, well, too bad. Let my ego sit in the corner and cry. Go sit in the corner and cry, ego, until you get over it. You'll be fine. That's the only solution. Now, if we do that, we will also practice detachment from attachment and aversion. We'll also practice being the observer mentally, watching our thoughts, feelings, and desires flow past us. We'll also have good habits. We'll also have good association. We'll also know the philosophy. We'll also know the rules. We'll also follow the rules. But that will not save us in and of itself. You get that? Does that make sense? And thinking that that will save us in and of itself, is that? We'll do those things because they'll please Prabhupada and Krishna, not because we're thinking that's what's going to save us. Can you get this subtle difference? Yes? And that's what does it. That's it. Now, will we be perfect about this today? Probably not. Prabhupada emphasizes over and over again that it's a gradual process. Gradually and proportionally. So as I gradually switch Sarvapati Vinirmuktantaparthen Nirmala Rishikesha Rishikena Sevanam Bhakti Richade. As I gradually give up my identification with this world, which is what's pushing this lust. Yes? I think I am this body, I am this mind, I am this ego. That's why I want to satisfy it at any cost, because I think it's me. So when I gradually give that up and focus more on Jivara Swarupar, Krishna and Nityadasa, and my business is to satisfy Guru and Krishna, then I start noticing that these things affect me less and less and less, and I'm less and less and less under their control, and it becomes less and less and less even of a pushing. It becomes less and less and less even of an inclination. It's not so much an inclination that I have to like go, okay, well, it becomes more and more automatic that I just want to satisfy Prabhupada and Krishna. And that's the only ultimate solution. So I got to 8:26. Questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions, chastisements? Yes, Maharaj.
Question. Could you repeat, if I missed it, what made it an inauspicious time for that relationship?
It was at the...
The
question was, what made it an inauspicious time? It was at a sandhya. It was at a juncture. And at the juncture, you're supposed to engage in meditation and prayer.
I was thinking of something else, and that is that Lord Shiva is passing at that time.
Yes.
Passing at that time, he's coming with a lot of inauspicious characters, ghouls and goblins.
Lord Shiva is coming with... But why is he? Why is Lord Shiva coming? See, what Lord Shiva is kind of in charge of the universal lunatic asylum. So if somebody is really mentally unstable and they're too mentally, their subtle body is too mentally unstable to get a gross body, somebody has to take care of it. Like we have our Chanaka Rishi, when he was working as a doctor before he retired, he used to take care of the people in the maximum security prison for the criminally insane. Somebody's got to take care of those people. So that's what Lord Shiva does. That's his job. And now he's trying to get them back into a body. Because unless they get a gross body, they can't continue. So he's trying to find a body to put them into. So why do you think he's coming at a juncture? It's an opening. Think of it as like going through an intersection. It's a juncture. Things are open. Things are different. You know, he knows how to take... Lord Shiva knows, of course he knows, he's personification of time himself. The glance of Mahavishnu is time, and it is Lord Shiva. He is time. So he knows exactly what time, and therefore one is supposed to stop one's activities at that time and just meditate. Because it's an opening for these beings. And he said, this is the time for meditation and prayer. This is not the time to have a child. I mean, she only had to wait like an hour. And it wasn't, by the way, it wasn't wrong of her to want a child with her husband. Everybody understands that, right? That wasn't, like, wrong. But what was wrong is she wasn't respecting the time. And it said that she wasn't respecting her husband either. You know, the mood was... I mean, there was also some envy there. She said, you know, my co-wives have children and I don't, and some of that. She has, you know, we find later in the Bhagavatam that she has some issues with these things. In the sixth canto, yes? Diti has some problems. Now there, in the sixth canto, Kasyapa deals with her very differently. Yes? There, where she wants a child who's going to kill Indra, he's able to work with her, and she becomes a Vaishnavi, actually, later on. So don't worry, she gets it together. Not only does he get it together, has a happy ending. Yes?
My question is related to
what you... Oh, thank you.
Is this on already?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm curious about that you mentioned that this personality had an apparent sense of lack of choice.
Yes.
And I just wonder, how do we continuously return or remind ourselves to this sense of choice that we are always of choice?
Ooh, I really like that question. I think that's a habit that we can get. I always have a choice. I always have a choice. We can start noticing words like can't, have to, should. How much do we use words like that? I have to, I should, I can't. I used to tell my Gurukul students, there's only two things you have to do. You have to exist and you have to serve. You can't stop existing and you can't stop serving. And everything else is a choice. It's always a choice. Now, once it goes from the contemplation to attachment to lust stage, we no longer feel that we have a choice. The definition of the lust stage is that it feels as if it's an urgent crisis and we absolutely have to act a certain way, that there's no choice. And people will say, I had no choice. There is always a choice. Now, there may not be very many good choices. This was Arjuna's problem at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. He said, I don't have any good choices. So, externally, we may be in a situation where there's not very many good choices, but we can always choose a karma. We can always choose to act for Krishna's pleasure. That we can always choose. That choice is always within our power. Even if on the external platform we don't have some sort of ideal choice to make. Now here when it says Kasyapa offered his obeisances to fate, he wasn't really like offering it to Krishna or even just to Lord Shiva. He was just saying, I guess it's destined, what can I do? Dhritarashtra was really good at this. This was his MO. So every time, you know, Duryodhana came up with something, he'd say, what can I do? I can't control my son. It's fate. Oh well. If there's going to be a war, there's going to be a war. If the Pandavas are going to die, the Pandavas are going to die. It's not my problem. I can't do anything about it. Oh well. It's fate. So that was Dhritarashtra's go-to, was this, oh well. It's fate. Is that clear? I mean, I think this is a... At first it's a philosophical concept, but then it's also practice. And it is particularly practice at the contemplation stage, noticing. These things often come upon us so fast, we don't realize, and sometimes we go right to anger. Yes? Like it says in the Bhagavatam, it feels like it falls out of the sky, like it feels like anger, like you're fine, and then something happens and poof, you're ready to destroy the universe. You know, it's like, how did I get angry? But it's always these steps. So a lot of it is practice. To notice contemplation before it gets to attachment. Attachment is harder to deal with. Lust is very difficult to deal with. Anger is even more difficult to deal with. Even if it's gotten to that stage, you can kind of unwind it. Prabhupada talks about in the fourth canto how you reverse the process of creation. You can kind of unwind it. Okay, I'm angry. Why am I angry? What was I, you know, absolutely attached to that I'm not getting or I'm afraid I'm not going to get? You know, what was it that I felt that I absolutely have to have or the world's going to collapse in 2 minutes? And then going back to the original thing, is that reasonable? Is that true? Is that absolutely true? You might say, well, yeah, it's true. Is it absolutely true? And 99% of the time it isn't. If I don't get that plate of prasadam, I'm going to die. Is that true? No. If I let that person think I did something I didn't do, you know, will my whole life be ruined? Probably not. You know, sometimes it helps when you're older because you've been through all these things and you see that you've survived. You know, it's like, yep, been through that, still living, still going on, okay. You know, that helps. But sometimes getting older doesn't help if a person has been habituated to giving into these things all the time. The ability to see that there's a choice point early on may be more and more difficult to do. And we see this even to people in our Hare Krishna movement. And they'll cover it with something philosophical. I mean, I've been guilty of this. you know, acting out of lust and anger, thinking I'm defending Prabhupada's movement or something like that. Yes? Can we see this? Yes?
I have a follow-up question.
Yeah, okay. And then we're getting late in them.
So you just mentioned that there's the fate, like leaving it up to fate, and I wonder what is the difference between saying, oh, it's fate, and like, oh, it's Krishna's plan, or he, you know, he's caring for everything.
Well, unless Krishna is sitting on your chariot, driving your chariot, and saying, yes, kill Karna while he's fixing his chariot wheel. Please do not do Vikarma thinking it's Krishna's plan.
Yeah.
Okay? If that, if you're on the, if Krishna's personally there on your chariot and he says, Karna's fixing his wheel, this is the time, which is normally Vikarma. Figure that Krishna doesn't want you to do Vikarma by definition. By definition, Vikarma is something that is not in accord with even ordinary truth, what to speak of absolute truth. Like, you know, who's going to ask you to walk through the wall? Now, if the Lord walks off the altar and walks up to you and says, walk through the wall, go ahead, walk through the wall, don't worry about it. But generally, the walls are there for you not to walk through. I mean, a very, 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 very simple example. So, you're at someone's house, and they have ways they like things to be done. Right? So you do things the way they like to be done. Like, always, I was just at Keshava's house, and he puts his wooden utensils in the dishwasher. When I'm at his older brother's Murari's house, he never puts wooden utensils in the dishwasher. They have their different ways. But suppose I'm visiting Murari, and he said, you know what? You can put that wooden utensil in the dishwasher. So if God's in front of you and says, you can do this, then you can do it. Otherwise, Vikarma means something that's opposed to the Lord. So you're not, I'm going to do something that Krishna doesn't want, and I'm going to say it's Krishna's arrangement. That it's actually, it's incongruous. It doesn't make any sense. Has anyone ever done something for you that they knew you wouldn't want, figuring you would want it? I know you don't like this, but I think it's what's good for you anyway, so I'm going to do it for you anyway. Has ever anyone done that to you? People have done that to me. Did you like it? No, not at all. You're like, excuse me. I mean, I remember, I'm not going to say the specifics, but I was telling this one devotee, okay, I can do any service, but not this service. And then she came and said, I have something wonderful for you, Ermila. Oh, what's that? This service. And I'm looking at her and thinking, I just told you that was the one thing I didn't want to do. I love doing it so much. You will also love it. And I'm sitting there thinking, huh? So to say I'm going to do something that I know that Guru and Krishna don't want me to do, and then I'm going to just say it was their arrangement and leave it up to them, is contradictory.
That wasn't my question.
When do we say, leave it up? You do the right thing and then you leave the results up to Krishna.
Yeah. But my curiosity was more of like, okay, we know it's out of our control, like with Duryodhana, or just saying about his son, like, oh, I'll leave it up to fate.
But Duryodhana was under Dhritarashtra's control.
Yeah.
It's not true. Okay. He was lying. If it's actually out of under your control, then it's out of your control. I'm not under. I can't control what you eat for breakfast.
Yeah.
But whether or not Kasyapa has a relationship with his wife was definitely under his control. Absolutely, totally, definitely. She wasn't raping him. It was absolutely under his control. And how Dhritarashtra dealt with Duryodhana was also under his control. Of course, things got to a point where he would have had to put his son in jail to stop it. But he allowed it to get to that point. Is that all right? Yeah. Ultimately, none of us can control the result, but we can control our own actions. Okay, we'll take one more and then we need to stop. Otherwise, I get in trouble. Yes? Prabhu? You would raise your hand.
You already answered my question.
I already answered your question. All right, very good. Okay. Very good. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you so much for your hospitality and engaging me in Srila Prabhupada's service.